Jason, I'm not supposed to say my last name. I have to make amends right off the bat, huh? My name's Jason. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's 11/30/07. I have a sponsor. His name's Carl out of Covina, California. I have a home group. It's called The Shed. We meet on Thursdays at noon. Look, I just switched home groups. I was at Sandy's Kitchen, but I have a meeting at my house that's got really big. And so a bunch of guys made it their home group. So I made it that way. But I'm scared to say that because I don't want a bunch of people to end up at my house. But I wouldn't have my house if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, everything I have in my life, it's a value and the good as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps. I want to thank Sonny for inviting me to do this and whoever threw my name in the hat. Thank you. I have a few friends on here I haven't seen in a while. I see Carol at everything, so that makes it easy. And I see Jeff at a couple of things. Look, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm one of those guys. Look, I'm just blue collar AA. I try to do it to the best of my ability. So in step eight and nine, really eight and nine, nine's the first one I had to leave my house, right? I had to go visit society. I had to get involved. And that's when my life started changing. For me, first seven steps were about me trying to be okay with me and getting the God of my understanding. But when I got to eight and nine, is when my life started taking new meaning to the community, to the world, and to out into the public. I'll share with you a little bit of what got here. I think I have to identify, and then I'll share a little bit of what some of the amends I made, wrong and right, right? And the key to this is, look, if you're new here, you're wanted, welcome, and needed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I could say anything before I get on this thing, is Alcoholics Anonymous works and God is real, right? And it wasn't until I got through these steps and I started believing in this process that my life got a little bit better. I grew up, my mom was a hippie, and we lived in a teepee, right? Or we lived in a log cabin when I was a little kid. And we lived up in the woods, and a lot of stuff happened up there. And then when we moved to town, my mom's house was a party house. And eventually what happened for me is my grandma showed up at my door one day and said, "Hey, you're coming to live at my house." And my grandma's that kind of person that just loved you no matter what, right? She's the one that doesn't give up on you. She's the one that's always believing in you. She's the one that's everything for that. And as a little kid, she became my best friend. But what happened for me is I got introduced to alcohol when I was in the sixth grade. The first time I drank, I didn't have that moment of, oh man, I felt better. I felt stronger. I felt pretty or anything like that. Man, I was sick for like 2 days, right? I drank and I got sick for 2 days. And I thought, man, this is a bad idea. And I had to go to work for the first time in my life. I remember coming home drunk. As a sixth grader, I walked into my grandma's house and I told her, "Man, I don't feel good. I'm sick all night." And the next morning, my grandpa's at the end of my bed yelling, "Get up, you got to go to work." And I was like, "I don't have a job." And he goes, "Get up, you're going to go to work." I said, "Man, I don't feel good." And he said, "If you're going to drink like a big boy, you're going to work like a big boy. Now let's go." And so I remember going to pick strawberries that day with my friends I'd been drinking with, and we were sick all day. And I remember looking at my friends and saying, "I'm not going to drink alcohol anymore." And I remember them looking at me saying, "You didn't like the alcohol?" I said, "I don't mind the alcohol. I just don't want to work." Right. And so I quit drinking. Right. I had no AA, no 12 steps, no treatment. I just quit. I was cold turkey until I got to high school. When I got to high school, the obsession for alcohol got kicked in. Right. That's where the craving kicked, because what I started doing, I started saving my lunch money during the weekday and pitching in on Fridays with some other guys, shoulder tapping and drinking on the weekends. We played sports during the week and we drank on the weekends. Nobody went to jail. Nobody went to prison. Nobody died of a heroin overdose. We were just having fun. Right. But what happened for me is alcohol started taking control of my thoughts, right? It started giving me, putting me in situations where I was uncomfortable. And one time it put me in, I got in a high speed chase on a motorcycle. I stole a motorcycle, got in a high speed chase, and I crashed. And I woke up in an ICU not knowing exactly what had just happened. And I'm talking to this nurse trying to let her know I'm alive, because I'm in one of these rooms where it's a sliding glass door and nobody comes in to see you. And she said, "We know you're alive." And I asked her what happened. She said, "You're in a drunk driving accident on a motorcycle." And I remember telling her, "I don't own a motorcycle." She said, "We know, right?" And I ended up making a decision in that hospital, man, I'll never drink or use or put anything in my body ever again. But for me, when I got out of that hospital, the only way I know how to address my alcoholism and those voices and that feeling of anxiety and fear that's inside my heart is to drink. Right. And so I just drank until I lowered my standards to keep up with my quality of life. Right. So eventually I'm living in an abandoned house, and I'm okay with that. Right. Alcohol makes those decisions okay. And what would happen was about once a month, one of my uncles would come down to wherever I was staying and say, "Hey, take me to a payphone and make me call my grandma." And I'd ask her, "Why do I have to call grandma?" And they said, "Man, because she calls every hospital, every institution, every jail, all your friends, us every morning wondering, has anybody seen Jason? Is Jason is alive? Can somebody please go find Jason? So you need to call her and tell her you're alive so that you could go, she'll quit calling us, right? And I remember getting on that phone and I would call my grandma and I'd tell her, Grandma, I'm doing really good. I have a job and I'm working out of town. And I would tell her I would come see her. But you know what? I'm an alcoholic who's powerless over alcohol. And what happened for me is I go back to wherever I was and I start drinking and I wouldn't go back, right? I wouldn't show up. I mean, every once in a while, I'd go to my grandma's house and I would show up and I would, she'd leave $5 on the counter or in her purse sticking out and I would steal it, right? And that's just how my life was. And I would go over and over with this lady. She had no Al-Anon. She didn't have anything. She had a grandson out there that she raised from a child. And all she wanted to do was love him and make sure he's okay. But as an alcoholic, man, I just burned that relationship to the ground. And then it eventually came to the point where my grandma was in ICU and they took her off of life support. And one of my uncles showed up at my tent and I was living in the bushes. And he said, your grandma's been in ICU for, about a week. We took her off of life support. She hasn't been awake in a day. Maybe you should come say goodbye. And I remember telling my Uncle Leroy, I don't want to go. And he's like, I didn't ask you if you wanted to go. You're going to go. But we got into his truck, and as we're driving to this hospital, he hands me a pint of vodka and tells me to drink it, right? And by the time I got to that hospital, I was okay with who I was, right? I know that I'm a piece of crap, and I'm not going to amount to anything in my family. But alcohol made that okay. And what I did is I went to that hospital, and I sat over to the one side of the waiting room, not with any of my family, because I know, look, alcohol rationalizes everything I make decisions on, right? So I could be the worst person in the world making the worst choices in the world. But when I put alcohol on my body, I can justify and rationalize that, right? And I remember my uncle coming out, or my aunt coming out and said, hey, you need to get in there and say goodbye and get out of here. And I went in I was getting ready to talk to my grandma, and my uncle Gary was there. And he said, just talk to her like she's here. Just hold her hand. And I remember I started talking to her and she opened her eyes and she looked at me and she started talking back to me, man. And I just panicked. Right. I didn't know what to do. And what I did is I do what I know how to do. Right. I told her I have a good job. I'm working out of town, but there's a lot of people out here that would like to see you. I'll come back tomorrow and visit. And, and she told me she loved me and that she was going to pray for me. And I remember as I was leaving that room, she told my grandma or my Uncle Gary, he's a good kid. He's going to do something with his life. Right. And I remember it just nutted me up inside. And that's the kind of relationship I had with that lady. Right. She loved me no matter what. Right. And all I did was break her heart and burn her. Because what I found out is through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that I love the most and the people that love me the most are the people I hurt the most, because I know they're just going to love me, right? And I went back to my tent and my grandma ended up passing. And one of my uncles came to pick me up to take me to the memorial and I didn't go. And I remember him telling me, you're going to regret this for the rest of your life. I hid in a closet with some Goldschlager and some Jägermeister. I didn't come out because my best thinking is if I can't show up for the woman that loved me when she's alive, why would I show up for her when she passed, right? I was embarrassed and I was scared. And what I did is I ruined a relationship. That was the only person in my life that I knew loved me no matter what, right? And I didn't go back. And, in the next 4 or 5 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe probably, it was a mess, right? And I ended up going into, it was a Sunday morning and I hadn't had anything in my body in a while. And I made that mistake. I called my uncle and asked him if he was going to church. And he said, yes. And I went to this church. They started singing that dang song, Amazing Grace. And I looked at my uncle and said, I think I have a drinking problem. He says, you think? And the whole church went quiet. And I said, yeah, I guess. And he checked me into a treatment center, right? And I went into this treatment center and I thought treatment was like prison, right? I didn't know you could leave, right? I thought you had to break out of there, right? Because there was only 5 people at this treatment center. And this treatment center had no caffeine, no sugar, and no women. Right. And it just wasn't a good fit. Right. And I was trying to explain that to people, but nobody were listening. So what I did is I started scamming how to get out of there. But as I was scamming how to get out of there, I heard these guys talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked up to them and I said, man, what's Alcoholics Anonymous? And they said, man, this is what they told me. That it's the miracle of AA for me. Right. They said there's caffeine, there's sugar, and there's women. Right. And I was like, man, where's it at? And they said, a van's going to pick us up and take us. I was like, even better. And this is where the first sight of a ninth step that was ever brought into my life, right? My mom and dad got divorced when I was really young and I never saw my dad, right? For 26 years. And I was 29 when this happened. At 26 years old, my dad called my mom out of the blue to pay back all the back child support he owed. And I went to a bank for about 3 minutes to get my half of the money and leave, right? I said hi to this guy, looked at him and was like, I don't need a dad. And I took my share of the money and I left, which I had to pay back because of sponsorship. But I went to there and I said hi to this guy, whatever, and I left, right? No hugging, no nothing like that. I get in this van 3 years later on a treatment center, and I'm praying to a God that I don't really believe in. Please don't let me know anybody in AA. And if I do, please don't let me owe them any money, right? My desire is not to, I don't need to get sober. And I go into this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sitting there, and I look back and I see a guy standing against the wall. And I said, I told these guys I'm with, I said, man, that looks like my dad. They said, you don't know who your dad is? I said, I've seen him one time in 29 years. And they said, well, you got to say something to that guy. So I walk up to this guy at a break in the meeting. I walk up to him. I said, hey, do you know who I am? He said, nope. I said, I think you're my dad. And he said, Jason. And I said, yeah. And I met my dad at my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I know today is he was doing a ninth step at that time, right? He had 3 years of sobriety. So he came to do that. So if you're going to do it, if you're doing step work, man, trust the process, right? When I get to 8 and 9, I have to trust the process. My grandma used to tell me all the time, God never says no. God either says yes, not right now, or I got something better. I'm here to tell you, I used to think that was the dumbest thing in the world. But I know this beyond a shadow of a doubt today. Because I remember as a little kid sitting on that front porch at my grandparents' house, being 7, 8 years old, coming home from school on a Friday, sitting on that porch waiting for my, with a duffel bag, waiting for my mom or my dad to come pick me up to take me somewhere for the weekend. And they wouldn't show. Right. And I remember one Friday sitting on there, and I went into the street light came on. I had to go back inside. I went in with my duffel bag. I set it down on the porch and the steps. And I went in, I told my grandma, I said, I'm not going to your Sunday school anymore. She said, why is that? I said, I've been praying to that God, that Jesus guy, every morning, every night, that my mom or my dad would come pick me up, and they didn't show. So I don't think he likes me. So I'm not going anymore. And I remember my grandma standing there kind of crying, looking at me. She said, okay. And I went in, I got on my grandpa's lap, and I told my grandpa, hey, I'm not going to go to, I don't want to sit on that front porch anymore. And he said to me, he said, buddy, you don't have to sit on that front porch ever again if you don't want to. And I made a decision right then and there that I didn't need a God and I didn't need a mom and a dad. Right. And that's how I became. But here's the thing. 29 years later, I'm sitting on my grandpa's front porch on a Friday night waiting for members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come pick me up. Right. And it's not like today where they call you on the cell phone. They would start honking the horn like 3 blocks away so that you're down on the curb when they get there. You know, and the car pulls up, and you know who's there to pick me up to take me to Alcoholics Anonymous? It's my dad. And if it wasn't for him doing a ninth step and doing the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would not be sitting in front of you today, because what he did is he picked me up and he took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I know today, beyond a shadow of a doubt, a ninth step can affect anybody, right? And we don't know what seed we're planting, and we don't know what it's doing. Sometimes we think that eighth and ninth step is about us, right? Selfishly, that's what it is, right? But more importantly, we're planting seeds that, hey, people's lives can change. You know, and I would go on to that. And I ended up getting sober, and I got a wife, and I had a kid, and my life got better in that 9 years of sobriety. Man, I started selling drugs, right? And because I couldn't stand AA, right? I was going to AA meetings, sitting in the back, and I couldn't stand it. And, you know, I ended up getting busted in a drug bust, and it went sideways, and I ended up getting sentenced to 48 months in prison. But here's what happened. At 48 months in prison, I was locked up in solitary for the first 3 weeks by myself, and something happened in there. For the first time in my life, I admitted to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, right? I admitted that I was the problem to myself, to nobody else. And I realized that I'm a lucky guy to be just locked up, right? And what I did is I ended up getting released from that jail. And my only restrictions were I had to get sober and get a job. And I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous, embarrassed and scared. And I got a sponsor and I got a home group and I got involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing since then. You know, and I got right into the steps. And when I got into the steps, I had a man sit down with me and take me through the book, right? He didn't tell me I needed a dictionary. He didn't tell me I needed a highlighter. He told me, let's sit down and we'll go through this together. And we related, and he explained stuff to me in a way that I could understand it, right? And in doing that, when we got to step eight, for me, I hear all the time that I had to make a list. But if I really look at the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me I already have my list, right? When I'm doing my four step, my inventory, I have my list. And I looked at the first column, and it was step eight. What I had to realize is I had to be willing to write everybody's name down, right? And the thing for me was, I wasn't sharing it with me. I just had to be willing. And as I went through that thing, the first thing he made me do is on every single person that I had to become willing with, I had to look at it and say it. I'd look at each name or each institution and say, I either owe them forgiveness or I owe them amends, right? With each person. And what that did is it took the power out of that resentment I had. And when it came time for me to look at my mistakes is when I got my list. And I made that list, and I had to become willing to do that, you know. And I went through it thoroughly, right? And there was a lot of stuff popped up, stuff, things, but I was able to use my inventory from four to get through that, to get my list. And I had to add to because there's certain things, and I add to today, right? That's obviously why I have a 10 step. But if I can do this 8 step, that ability to clean up my past, I'm not digging that hole any deeper, right? And I can act currently. But the things that were on that list that I had to make amends to, the ones were the big ones, were my grandparents and my wife and my daughter, right? And when I got to that part of step nine, I didn't, you know, I guess for me, the mistake I made on step nine is one of them. I went to make amends to my wife and I just dumped, right? I didn't run it by anybody. I just did my deal and I went and I dumped on it because I was trying to get all my guilt and my shame off, right? So when it says in step nine, we made direct amends where possible, as long as it wouldn't hurt somebody else or a certain situation, what it did is I was trying to clean my own baggage, right? I was just dumping. And what it was is I dumped it the incorrectly way, and I made more of a mess than I did good, right? And so I would suggest to anybody that does a step nine that you run it by your sponsor. You get down and you look at those causes and conditions and look at why am I making this amends and maybe practice that amends, right? So that you have some kind of game work to go into that. You know, with my daughter, look, I wasn't the best dad in the world, right? And what I did today is I learned how to address that, right? I've learned how to, when I make a mistake, I can clean that up. I've done my best to be a better father. And I remember as a when my daughter was a little girl, I remember being like 7, 8 years old, and her friends were over at our house playing, and I yelled at them so bad that they went and hid in a closet because they were scared of me, right? I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm scaring these little kids, right? And they called Amy. Cody called her mom Amy to come pick them up because they were scared of me, right? And what happened was is I didn't know what to do, but I went back to my sponsorship line and I went to a group of guys and I said, man, I don't know how to be a father. I don't know how to do this thing. I want to kill my kid. I want to kill you. I want to kill myself at any time. And I need help. And one of the guys said, this is what you're going to do, Jason. And I go, what's that? He goes, man, every time we go to Alcoholics Anonymous things, events, the first thing my kids ask is Jason going to be there? And the reason they ask is because every time you see my kids, you make sure they're entertained, you make sure they're fed, and you make sure you give them a hug and tell them you love them. So why don't you try doing that with your daughter when you're having problems with her? Treat your daughter like you're babysitting my kids. And I thought, man, that'll never work. But I started doing that because that's on the living amends, right? I started treating my daughter differently. And what happened for me is when my daughter was 13 years old, she was having a slumber party over at the house with all those girls, right? And it's like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And man, I guess they're making a lot of noise because my wife woke me up and said, hey, you need to go in there and make it. You need to quiet them down. I said, man, I didn't invite any of them, right? It's not my problem, right? I was sleeping. And so I went back to sleep and that doesn't really work in my house. And my wife hit me and said, you need to get in there. So now I'm mad, right? And I get up and I walk into this room. I open up the door, man, and there's 8 or 9 of these little girls bouncing around, jumping up and down on phones, TV blaring, radios on. I mean, it's a disaster. Man, I just lost it, right? I gave them everything I had. And I said things I probably shouldn't say to anybody, but I said it to him, right? And I shut that light off and I slammed that door shut and I went back in my bed and I could hear the voices in my head saying, is that how you treat anybody? For the longest time, you've been treating these kids like they're human beings. Why would you treat somebody like that, right? You can't do that. And so what I did is I got up and I went back and I opened up that door and turned the light on. They're all just staring at me. And I said, man, I'm sorry, right? I made a mistake. I go, I overreacted. What you guys need to do is you just need to turn the TVs down, the radio down, and turn the lights off and act like you're going to sleep because you're making Julie really mad, right? And they all started laughing. But here's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I went to close that door, my daughter's best friend, Amy or Cody, said, I told you guys he would come back and apologize. That's because I had done a 9 step and I'd been working that process, right? I'd been trying to be a little bit better than I really was. And I had to do a living amends with my daughter and so forth. And today, man, I mean, these kids are 25, 26, and 4 or 5 of them call me every Father's Day and wish me happy Father's Day. On my birthday, they all text me or call me and tell me they love me. Because what they saw is they saw a gentleman doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I might have been the only example, just like my dad showing up, right? I have to trust the process of the 9 step. And what I did is I just started doing these things, right? But there's some of the 9 steps that I had, I just didn't know. I was scared, right? With my grandpa raised me and I loved him with all my heart, right? But I remember he was alive and I had to go make amends to him, right? And I remember going over to his house and sitting down and I went over it with John and I had a little card and I had it all figured out, right? And I got in the house and I told my grandpa, I started talking to him, said, Grandpa, you know I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's like, yeah, everybody knows you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, well, there's these steps and I got to make this right. And then step nine, I did some things. I want to tell you, I love you. And I did these certain things. But here's the bottom line. I stole a lot of money from grandma and you, and I borrowed a lot of money and I never paid it back. He goes, oh, I know. I said, I don't know how much it is, grandpa. He goes, I do. I go, what do you mean you do? And he goes, hold on a second. He goes in my grandma's room and he comes back out with these spiral notebooks from like, my grandma was like the mom, right? From like 1977. And it had every IOU, every dollar I stole, every contract I ever wrote, all the way to like 1995. Holy crap, right? I looked at my grandpa, I said, I can't pay. I mean, there was contracts in there. There was IOUs. I started out mowing the lawn for 25 cents and picking up apples for 2 cents an apple. Man, and she had it all documented, right? Everything I stole. And I said, man, grandpa, I can't pay all this back. He goes, I know you can't. I said, well, what can I do? He said, you just keep helping people. I said, that's great, right? But here's the thing. You know, you're looking at these books and it's kind of like your history of your life. Like I was literally a train wreck, lying, conniving kid from the very get-go, right? But in this one section in 1984, it said, Jason stole $5. Jason stole $5. Jason stole, I mean, for like 2 weeks, right? So I finally asked my grandpa, I said, hey, how do you know I stole this $5? He said, well, that's an easy one. He said, every Thursday night, I put $5 in the coffee cup in the hutch. Every Friday morning, it was gone. The only people that lived in the house are you, me, and grandma. Who do you think stole it? Grandma? I was like, oh, you probably got me. And I remember looking at him and I said, if you knew it was me, grandpa, why didn't you tell me to stop? And he said to me, he said, Jason, many times I asked you to stop, asked you if you did it, and you told me no. I said, but you knew I did it. He goes, yes, but here's the secret, Jason. Stealing isn't wrong until it's wrong to you. And I'd rather you steal from me than our friends or our family or your neighbors, right? And that's the guy I thought was out to get me, you know? And I remember leaving that house and I got in my car and I called John to tell him, hey, I did my ninth step on my grandpa. And he said, well, how'd it go? I said, great. He goes, how much do you have to pay back? I said, nothing. So away I went, I had to go back, right? And I went back to my grandpa's house and we sat down and there's a couple of things we found out, that he would never pay for bottled water and he was never going to pay for TV, right? And he would have been hating it during the pandemic, but that's a whole nother story. But, you know, I said, okay. And what we ended up doing is I ended up getting him cable TV till the day he died. That was the agreement he'd let me buy him cable TV. And I remember a couple of weeks after he got the cable TV, he called me up and he's all excited. And we talked about Pawn Stars. We talked about the History Channel. We talked about ESPN. We talked about news channels being on 24 hours a day and how many channels there were on TV. And it was probably an hour, hour and a half into this conversation. At the end of that conversation, he said to me, he said, man, this is one of the coolest gifts anybody's ever gotten. That was me making an amends that I had no idea that I was going to get the benefit from. Right. You know, and what I did is I took the action. I became willing to do those things. You know, the action with my grandma was dead. So if you're in here today and you have somebody that you owe an amends to and you can feel it, I know that feeling. Right. And if they're not here, they're not available. I know what that feeling is. And look, I wrote letters. I went to the gravesite. I looked for butterflies, dragonflies, potato bugs. I tried ants. I did everything you guys told me to do. But I couldn't get that relief so far down in there that I couldn't get that ache to go away, right? Because I was embarrassed, I was scared, and I couldn't believe I did that to somebody I loved. And the more I got sober, the more it hurt. And what happened for me is, look, I'm the kind of guy, if you give me a clear-cut direction, sometimes I don't get it, right? But if you give me, you can share with me a story and I can feel it, you got me, right? What happened was, is the guy sent me a story. This guy, Jimmy Jack, sent me the story about this little kid. He was the firstborn in his family. And his sisters were born and his dad started paying attention to his sisters and he got really jealous, right? But he knew his dad loved football. So he went and asked his mom and dad if he could play football. And they signed him up for Pop Warner football, boy. And it was a bad idea. He's not really a football player. Didn't really like football. More of a trumpet kid. But he played because after every game and every practice, his dad would come find him and give him a hug and tell him he loved him and how proud he was of him. And the young man just kept doing it and kept doing it because he wanted that attention, right? And finally, his senior year, his team's going to the state championship. He's played football for all these years and he's going to the state championship. It's a couple of weeks before the big game. They're at practice. And the coach calls him over to the sidelines and says, son, I don't know how to tell you this, but your dad had a heart attack today and he didn't make it. And the young man hit his knees and he started crying. And he got up and he asked the coach in front of all his friends, he goes, hey, can I go home a little early today? And the coach said, this is just a football game. Go home and take care of your family. Take care of what you got to do. Don't worry about football. And the young man left. And a couple of weeks later, the big game came and his team's losing by a lot. And It's like the third quarter and he shows up late. He runs out there and everybody starts cheering. He runs up to the coach and asks him if he can play. And the coach is like, well, we're losing anyway. You might as well. The kid runs out there and he intercepts the ball and he runs it back for a touchdown. And then he ends up winning the game for his team, right? The state championship, the worst player in probably the history of his school does this, right? And they carry him off. And that night, as the coach is leaving the locker room, he sees a young man sitting in the back all by himself. And he walks up and he starts talking to him. He says, man, take as long as you want. And the young man says, thanks. And the coach says, I need to ask you something. He says, man, you're not the best athlete I've ever coached. What happened out there tonight? That was a great game of football. And the young man says, coach, I don't know if you know this or not, but after every game, no matter if I sat on the bench or I lost the game for us, no matter what, my dad would come find me and tell me he loved me and how proud he was of me. And he'd give me a hug. The coach said, man, you had a good dad. And the coach, young man says, thanks. And as the coach is walking off, the young man says, coach, I don't know if you know this or not, but my dad was blind. And tonight's the first night he ever really got to see me play. And just like that, I got relief, because I know that every time I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I say, my name is Jason Johnson, I'm an alcoholic, my grandma gets to see that. Or I walk in and I see somebody that's new that I haven't seen there before. And I walk up to them and I shake their hand. I ask them if I get a cup of coffee, if I can sit by them. That's the amends I made to my grandma. I know today that I'm good there. I know that when I die and I go to that big meeting in the sky, that's where I'm going first thing, because I want to make sure there's a Bill, a Bob, and a Jesus, right? Because of the step work I got, because of the step work of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to be able to, when I get up there, I'm going to be able to see my grandma and tell her it's the damnedest thing. Grandma, these people in this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, they found a solution to their problem and they introduced it to me. But most importantly, grandma, some of those people showed me some grace. And doing that, they introduced me to a kid inside of here that you only believed existed. I owe everything I have to Alcoholics Anonymous and the ninth step of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I want to read one thing and I'll be done. I think I keep getting away that. When I started going through the ninth step, if I really look at this, the promises are at the end. And I think if you were to do this and you wouldn't read the promises at step 90, it says, if we were painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experiences can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude upon life will change. Fear of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Jason. AA has no dues or fees for